Frank and Aaron Fitzgerald as they lead discussions about substance use disorder and the journey to recovery. You're listening to Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution.
Gotta just let that heartbeat happen there, don't? Oh, it just feels so good, Aaron. Well, a good morning to you, my friend.
Hello, Betty.
We are here with Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution. My name is Kati Frink, and my co-host is Aaron Fitzgerald.
Hello.
How are you?
Super.
Super. Here we are doing this thing again.
Again.
Man, it's a rocking day.
Yes. I'm excited for today.
Tell me about it.
Representing Minnesota Recovery Connection. And today we get to dive into the discussion about harm reduction.
Erin's favorite subject. She's taken this over at Minnesota Recovery Connection and just done a bang up job.
I just love it. It's one thing that I love literally is when we are talking about supporting all pathways to recovery, we get to blow minds.
Mm-hmm.
In our training, we watch folks just like light up when they discover what honoring all pathways actually means.
Right.
And so, yeah, I just love talking about it.
Well, it just changes somebody's perspective on getting better. You're right. There was somebody in the previous class who she missed part of a day, and she was really kind of she wasn't sure if she liked this whole harm reduction conversation. So yeah, it's interesting to watch that happen.
Yeah, I like it. So, Kati, what's right with you?
What's right with me today?
Yeah.
Today's a good day. I got my energy. I got my friend across the mic from me. I'm feeling like what life has to offer is so great. There are days when it isn't always feeling that way, but you know what? I am just feeling so energized and excited and feeling like life is super freaking cool.
Good.
How about you, Aaron? What's right with you?
I love those days. Well, I've been preaching about peer services and harm reduction since you blew my mind in your training. And I didn't know that I practiced harm reduction in, you know, my cycle of recovery, not recovery. And so what's right with me today is this conversation, because I get to tell people exactly what it means to me. I mm-hmm. get to express why harm reduction is important to me, because it's through my perspective, it's a really simple concept, right? The way that I see harm reduction, it just makes sense.
Right.
And there's a lot of backlash, especially in the substance use world, right?
Right.
And so what's right with me today is that we get to speak about harm reduction. I get to tell you why I'm passionate about it. And it's likely because of like the traumas that I've endured through my life.
Right.
Right. That's why I'm passionate about it, because it's more than just addressing the substance. Right. I was feeling hurt and empty.
Yep.
It's addressing all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When I'm unseen, when I'm unheard, and all of these things. So, yeah, when we learn how to cope in ways that are unhealthy, and that doesn't mean just substance either. Right. Just, I'm just excited to talk about all the things.
You should see her face, everybody. she's like this little lightning bolt of like, I got to tell you all about this.
I know. I feel like we should just dive into it.
Well, let's talk about, there's a lot of confusion around harm reduction. So we're going to talk at great length about it. But when we say harm reduction, people think, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So let's give some examples of what everyday people do as far as harm reduction. And I think I sort of mentioned this a couple shows ago, but me just taking my medications in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm reducing the harm for the effect of my high blood pressure.
Absolutely. Yeah, putting on your safety belt in the morning, taking your insulin for folks with diabetes.
Right.
Yeah.
If you got an EpiPen with you, if you got some sort of substance in you, a bee sting or a peanut allergy, and you have that EpiPen, that is harm reduction. You're reducing the harm. And so when we are talking about harm reduction with substance use disorder, people think, well, you just have to stop using your substance. It's like, that's harm reduction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got other spins on that.
Yeah, and I'd like to throw in the mental health medications too, because
thank you.
That's one where I can really kind of get people to understand why it's important mm-hmm. and why it's important to not tell people what to do with their form of harm reduction.
Right. Yeah. We've had many discussions when we talk about this with our students in the class. Last show, we were talking about the peer recovery specialist training, and this is a big part of how we talk about harm reduction and then medicated assisted treatments, because they kind of fall hand in hand within that conversation mm-hmm. about, you know, how do we take care of somebody and not judge them? Because one of the issues that can come up when people are on their journey of recovery is that if they are practicing harm reduction in different modes, like you said, mental health issues, sometimes people in certain rooms, in certain spaces say, well, you're still taking a drug, so you're not sober or you're not in recovery. Mm-hmm. And you would say to that, Erin,
yeah, BS. You're not my doctor. Don't tell me to not to take my medications.
Right, right. You know, and this is where we got to really, this is that listening part to people and what their recovery looks like to them. Mm-hmm. What is their pathway? Which is the whole idea around harm reduction, is it is another pathway to recovery. We can do it in so many different ways. And when we are listening to people and we're hearing them get better, and they're doing it in a way that works for them, guess what? Their outcome might be their choice versus what we tell them to do.
Right. They might be more apt to do that thing mm-hmm. if they discover that they want to do it. So when we talk about harm reduction, we're starting with from a place that is of compassion mm-hmm. and non-judgment, right? We're showing people love. The first thing we have to do is not look at that substance or the label that we've given people. I'm not going to look at an addict. I'm going to look at the person, and I want to know what it is that they need. Mm-hmm. What it is that, what happened, right? Mm-hmm. What happened to you?
Yeah.
And what do you need in order to move forward with this? And do you want to quit? Are you ready to quit? Do you want to do things safer? What are all the different things? We use those motivational skills again.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that is important is to know what somebody is struggling with, because there's a lot of different chemicals out there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those are questions that we will ask someone in this journey of helping them out. Mm-hmm. What's been your chemicals? What have you been using? Because each chemical has a different way of reducing harm, and how we can help somebody address it. Now, remembering that we are not clinicians, mm-hmm. we are not that, but what we can do is we can say, hey, what I've heard is, what I've learned from class or education is this, this, and this about a particular chemical. Last show, I was talking about a woman who was struggling with her alcohol, and the woman said, who was concerned about her in-law was, you know, she might go through DTs. And I said, you know what, that's a really good point, because we got to make sure that she's safe.
Safe, yeah.
In the way that she is choosing her recovery. Mm-hmm. Harm reduction, reducing the harm. If somebody has a big use in alcohol, we can't just pull it away. Can't just stop, can you, Erin?
No, absolutely not. That's very dangerous.
Yeah, could kill somebody.
Absolutely.
Literally could kill someone. So note to self, the folks out there, can't just stop sometimes, because that's more dangerous than actually the chemical in and of itself. So it all just sort of comes around to this: how do we reduce the harm, both that somebody may be choosing to do to themselves, or they might just be caught up in?
Mm-hmm.
So
what?
We're about ready to take a break. So why don't you close us out, and we'll come back after the break.
Well, when we come back, I just want to make some bullet points of things that actually are harm reduction, right? And then we'll maybe have some discussion about those, because as you said, all the different substances have different forms of harm reduction mm-hmm. that we can use. And that doesn't mean it has to be a medication, but different techniques and strategies.
Right.
So we'll talk more about that when we come back in a couple of minutes.
Great. Thank you for listening to Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution brought to you by Minnesota Recovery Connection.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution. We have come back from break, and we are here to continue our conversation about harm reduction in the substance use disorder world that we live in with recovery.
Yay.
Erin, tell us some more.
Yeah. So, again, I can't reiterate this enough. Harm reduction starts with a place from compassion, right? Mm-hmm. Looking beyond the label, beyond the substance, and meeting people right where they're at. Whether that's they're in full-blown chaos use or they're using sometimes or whatever the case may be. And we meet their immediate needs then, right? It's giving people options and choice in their life, in their recovery. Many people don't have options about anything anymore at this point in their life, right? And so just giving them an option, saying, hey, man, did you know that you can use this clean needle over here instead of those ones that you found in the street? Mm-hmm. That could just brighten somebody's day.
Right.
They have a choice now.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's empowering for people, right? We're giving people power back. And so if a person isn't ready to quit using substance, we have resources and support to help them use differently or safely.
Mm-hmm.
But really, harm reduction is, you know, it's just mitigating the effects of dangerous substances or dangerous things that we're using, right? And harm reduction also has a very positive impact on our communities, which is sometimes the opposite of what folks
think.
But it's a positive impact on our communities and on the individuals,
mm-hmm.
right? So what are, Caddy, what are some specific things that folks do? Like, what are some specific forms of harm reduction?
Well, when we're talking about harm reduction in the substance use world, we're talking about, like you said, medications. We're talking about safe places where people can get their materials
mm-hmm.
for their if they're injecting
mm-hmm.
or if they are utilizing. So if they're an injectable, are they cleaning the wounds? Are they taking care of that?
I was going to lead them in slowly.
Oh, well, I was just going right for it. You tell me what you want to talk about. I was just kind of
cut
going
him at
for
the throat. Get it.
I know, well, you know, these are some of the things that people don't realize that, you know, I'm sure there are folks out there who have seen needles on the ground,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're like, those people, they're just addicts and they're just criminals and they're awful and they do all these things. Well, one of the key things that I learned about harm reduction was that if you show somebody some love, and you say, here, come here, come here, come and I'm going to give you some materials. I'm not going to judge you. If you are injecting things into your body, and I can't stop you. People say, if you give them that, they're going to do it more. Well, no, they're going to do it anyway. So let's give them a place to get things that will give them hope. You give somebody the things they need to use their substances in a more clean way, in a healthy way. What have you done? You've actually cared for a human. And when you care for a human, the human might care for themselves. And
what a concept.
You know, I came out of the gate hot on that one. But
no, that's great.
That's the thing that I think people misunderstand about when we talk about harm reduction, and that is, if we say to you, you don't have to do anything different than what you're doing, but can you please take these things that will help you be safer? Because I want you to live through this. Because if you make a decision to change anything, I want you to be alive long enough.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly why I'm passionate about this, is because it's all about the love. I literally got kicked out of a home, of my parents' home, because I was trying to stay sober, really struggling, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is at the very tail end of, mm-hmm. this was in 2018. And they found a couple little Tudor bottles that I had snuck, and they kicked me out because they didn't want to enable me. And God bless them. They have done and do for me, and they're fabulous. They didn't know better. I didn't know better. But they kicked me out. And what did that lead me to, Caddy? Woo! Let me tell you, a little psych ward action, a couple big relapses, and, you know, it wasn't pretty.
Nope.
If somebody could have just said, I understand that you feel the need to drink this, but, like, maybe we can just drink a little bit, or like, mm-hmm. I'll sit here with you and let's right. talk about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just such an interesting idea that people, we hope that we can at least give you an opportunity to think about helping somebody through a situation, not try to change it and change it for them and to them. Mm-hmm. It's that whole idea that if somebody comes to their own conclusion with some support, they might be able to see that there's a different path. But when you're immersed in your substance, as I was for years, mm-hmm. I was just on a track. I was sort of that high-functioning drunk, but I was on a path of destruction. And if, you know, we keep saying, if somebody, now we have peer recovery services and mm-hmm. peer recovery specialists, if somebody would have said, hey, Kathy, why don't we sit down and talk about, oh, still bring you a bottle of wine, but let's do it at your house, and there's only one bottle of wine mm-hmm. available, then, and we shared it, then there's only half a bottle. Well, maybe I would have had three quarters, but, right. you know, this is what harm reduction is. We look at it from a perspective of how can I help someone do something different? It doesn't have to be better, just different. Mm-hmm. And give them the love and support. We talk a lot about love and support because that's what people need most times.
Absolutely. That's where it all starts from.
Yeah. They've been told you're a schmuck, you're a loser, you're an addict, you're a drunk, you're all these things.
And then when we can't quit doing the things they don't want us to do, then they isolate us, they kick us out of their lives, right?
Well, that tough love whole thing. Now, yeah. that has now been, let's all just know that tough love thing has now been sort of burnt to the ground. Love is not the way to go about it. Mm-hmm. People think if I just reject someone and if I just say, I don't accept you, then you're going to feel so much pain that somehow you'll look at your own substance use disorder differently. No, you've actually implemented more pain on someone because you've isolated them even more. So I've seen a couple of shows and I've watched a couple of things where they talk about the whole tough love thing, and it ain't a thing. It's more about more love, more care. What can I do? So, okay, we're just going off the rails
here.
No, we're
not doing interventions on folks.
No.
We're going to say we're going to open these doors. So very exciting in Minnesota that we now have a bill passed so that we can open these overdose prevention sites in Minnesota. Did you want to talk about the facility that opened yesterday?
Yeah. Can you remind me the name of it?
No.
Minnesota Awareness.
Alliance. Overdose Awareness.
Overdose Awareness. Okay, so.
Wow, we're bad.
Yeah, we'll just piece that one together for you folks. Brand new. Grand opening was yesterday, so we're all still kind of learning about how to do this. But this is a space where people can get supplies needed to sustain their lives. Mm-hmm. And this is a place where people can take a shower, where people can go to the bathroom, where people can get some conversation. I won't even say counseling per se, because that could be part of it, right?
Right. So there's many places that syringe access points where you can get your clean utensils and testing strips and stuff. And what's different about these places is they're really going to open up the doors to the counseling and the what next, right? Because mm-hmm. we can get our medicated assisted treatment and recovery at different facilities too, but this will be different in that it will it gives you
a gateway,
a better gateway, right? And you have more facilities there, so people might be more apt to come in and say, yeah, I guess I could wash my clothes today, and now let's sit down and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. Right. And so maybe somebody wants, they've decided now that they want to stop using and they want to stop injecting. Mm-hmm. Right. And they can just get on their medicated assisted recovery and move on with their day. Because what do we know about medicated assisted recovery?
It will sustain a life. It will keep people alive. Mm-hmm. And this is a, you know, if anybody's out there who has been in meetings and spaces and places where people are using medicated assisted recovery, which is, it is, these are medications that are prescribed by a doctor, particularly the biggest one is going to be for opiates. Mm-hmm. So that people, the opioid epidemic is real. It's very loud. It's killing people I think it's 91 or 101 people die a day in our country from it. And what we do is we can use these medicated assisted therapies and recovery medications so that if somebody gets on this medication, it fills the void of the opiate and they begin to, they don't have to take the illicit drug. They take this prescribed medication from a doctor, if I'm putting my, trying to put a fine point on this, folks, prescribed by a doctor to relieve them of the urge to do the opiate. And this is where people can get better.
Yes. It's relieving that obsession, right? And so if it's working and we start to feel better, we get to move on with our lives. The obsession is gone. And this is the point where I like to go back to those mental health medications. Mm. I'm not ever going to tell you to not take your mental health medication, just like I'm not going to ever tell somebody that they shouldn't continue to take their medicated assisted recovery, because I don't know what's going to happen if you take, if you stop taking that drug, right? In general, symptoms come back.
Yep.
And what happens if somebody on opioids has their symptoms come back and they can't get that Suboxone? Well, they're going to go back out to the illicit street drugs.
Yeah.
And what do we know about street drugs? They're freaking dangerous.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not testing them. You don't know where you're getting it from, and they could kill you.
Yeah.
So let's stop telling people to stop taking their drugs. You need to wean off of that. No, you don't know that.
And this is where, you know, a little education for the public about fentanyl. Most everybody has heard about fentanyl. And that actually is the street drug of choice now. And it's used in many different ways. We don't necessarily have to talk about the ways it's consumed in the body. But then there's also another chemical that is being mixed with that, which is called xylazine. And that's probably, people are going, what's that? Well, it's a tranquilizer. I can never say that word. That is intended for animals. And it's mixed in with fentanyl. And this is where the trouble is that you have an opiate and you have a non-opiate. If somebody has too much of one, the synthetic drug that is not an opiate, if they have an overdose, they could die, because we also have Narcan and Naloxone that are out there. And these are drugs that are to bring people back from an overdose. And many people have heard of it. Our whole community is wildly aware of it.
Oh, yeah.
And we need to have the rest of the population know that these are drugs that are saving lives. You see somebody who might have had an overdose in some way, shape, or form in your life. And what you can do is you can give them one of these life-saving drugs, and it will bring them back. And maybe that person won't stop using, but maybe they'll be grateful that they didn't die. And sometimes that's kind of a 50-50 shot. They might not be thrilled that they came back, because they're like, you killed my high, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what you hear from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it puts you basically into an automatic withdrawal.
Yeah.
But it saves your life.
Yeah.
And so some people are very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
My life is saved. I've got to change it.
Yeah. Wow. I get to look at, like, they cared enough to carry Naloxone, and they brought me back to life. Maybe that might be the day that somebody goes, now what do I do? And then you can walk into one of these spaces or places where somebody is sitting there and they can just have a conversation. And maybe they want to get counseling, or maybe they want to just take a shower, but they can just have a safe place to go. Our office is open for people too. They come and get Naloxone in our office. And we've had people that come into Minnesota Recovery Connection that are altered in one way, shape, or form. They might be drunk, or they might have other drugs on in their system. But we just say, we're glad to have you, because this is a safe place and we are not going to judge you. And the whole idea around harm reduction is to let people know that it's okay to not be okay. I'm going to keep going back to that statement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we have all these other things that have happened with cannabis. Has now been legalized in the state of Minnesota. It's not all figured out yet. We all know that. That's still a hill that has to be climbed. But one of the things that I hope happens is that when people can buy cannabis, they're buying it from someone who is testing their testing the cannabis and the marijuana, pot, whatever you want to call it, because sometimes the pot out on the streets can be laced with things, and that can kill somebody. And so all these measures, you know, people think, well, we can't have pot in stores, people will just get high. Well, they're going to do
They're going to get high anyways, folks. Yeah. You can buy stuff off the black market, off Snapchat and Craigslist and whatever else, too. And if you're not testing those drugs, you have no idea what you're actually getting.
Yeah.
Going back to the naloxone, I wanted to talk about never using alone. Mm. That's a form of harm reduction that people really just look over. Not using alone will save your life. And if you can't use alone, there's phone numbers that you can call that will stay on the line with you. Never use alone. But 88% of people that die from an overdose die alone. Mm-hmm. That's an insane amount of number. To me, that says shame.
All over the place.
We're just filled with it. I can't reach out to anybody and let them know that I'm struggling this bad. I'm going to go do this by myself.
Yeah.
And then we die.
Yeah. And nobody, no, and that in that shame, it's like nobody will understand me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like so many people will understand you.
Yeah.
That's why we have people out there that do the work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
It is just, it's absolutely paramount that we, if you recognize somebody is struggling, don't leave them alone. Talk to them. You might not stop them from using their chemicals, but you show them love. You show them that I care enough about you that I'm willing to sit by you. And even, I don't know if I'm even comfortable with what you're doing, but I want to make sure that you're alive because I got naloxone in my bag.
Mm-hmm. Just in case I need it.
Just in case.
Yeah. And you may never see that person again. It might just stick with them long enough. One day they're going to say, I remember that one person. They cared about me. They said I could get some clean needles over here, or I could do this there. I have options. They said, mm-hmm. I have options. I never knew I had options.
Yeah. I think, you know, for a lot of folks that struggle with any kind of substance use, it's that I don't have anybody who really knows what I'm going through. And it takes, you know, gosh darn it, that's what we keep talking about with peer recovery services and peer-to-peer services. If somebody can talk to somebody who gets it, it makes such a difference because mm-hmm. that loneliness, it doesn't necessarily go away, but it gets a little bit subsided.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, you get me?
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, too, is like if you're using, you have to quit to go into treatment, right?
Right.
At least to some degree some places will take your medicated assisted recovery, your Suboxone or whatever, but most places won't.
Mm-hmm.
And so how am I supposed to quit in order to get to that treatment facility? And maybe I've been to one before and they didn't treat me well, so I've got some kind of fear about going back to this place. So we need these options. We need mm-hmm. these facilities to open up so that people have a safe place to inject their drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So these overdose prevention sites have been open since the 80s.
Good heavens to Betsy. That's
how
amazing.
Many people have died inside of them, Caddy?
Absolutely none.
You mean 100% of lives have been saved?
At a safe use site all over the globe, except for in the United States. But there's a few places. But yeah, not one human has died if we have these, what we call safe use sites. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people go in, inject their drugs, and they are then given the opportunity to chill out, maybe if they're a little too high, or maybe they're just a little bit less than able to kind of walk or talk, just chill out. Hey, what are the other options there in those places, Erin?
Right. I don't know. Maybe they got snacks for them. Maybe they got games. I bet they can find some community activities.
Wow. And then maybe there might be some help in this space.
You mean recovery?
Is it even possible? Maybe we can sit down with somebody, even if they might be a little stoned or they might be a little high, and just say, hey, I'm so glad you're here. I know you're safe. We have other options in these buildings that can maybe give you some ideas about hope mm-hmm. and places to go, even just to have a conversation. Because guess what? We're going to listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to hear about maybe why you are doing these substances, what happened. And it could be big, insurmountable things that people are running away from, or it could just be something that happened that is so painful in a different way in their life, and they just need to be heard.
Heck, it could literally be because there was pain, and then you were prescribed that medication, right?
Hey, imagine that. You mean the opioid crisis
Weird.
That happened back in the 90s or the 2000s?
We both know people who have literally gone through that before and come out in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of their story is it was a prescribed medication, and it got out of control before they knew it.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult to get off.
Very difficult. And it's a better doctor that says, ooh, those prescriptions are getting a little bit more still, there's the word, I lost the word, I'm still prescribing them, and their injury or their thing that happened 7 months ago, 8 months ago, 9 months ago, and they're still using them and they need more, it's a better doctor that's going to say, wait a minute. But that is not what's happening. A lot of doctors just, they keep prescribing them. I've got friends that have been through that, and it takes a lot. And I want to also point out that one of the things that we want to make sure that we recognize is that there is a lot of mature adults that do exactly Absolutely. What their doctor orders, and that is, you're having pain, here are these wonder drugs. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just keep taking them, because it'll take your pain away. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're a mature adult, many of people just say, my doctor says I can take them. Well, there's a story about a community paramedic that I worked with at one time. He went to a retirement home a more mature gentleman, was flat out on the ground. They suspected a heart attack. They suspected a stroke. They suspected a diabetic reaction. And the paramedic thought, I'm just going to hit him with some Narcan. And guess what? He popped right up. He had experienced an overdose of the drug that he had been prescribed. So we really have to be aware that this is not just a street problem, folks. Mm-hmm. This is a problem everywhere. And this is why we've got films out there. We've got lawsuits out there. We've got hundreds and thousands of millions of dollars coming to cities that have been profoundly affected by this, because it was something that came in a very overwhelming way, medically prescribed, and went bat. You know what, crazy. Yes. I know. We can just sit. Aaron and I are just sitting here staring at one another like, oh my gosh, we could go in so many different directions.
Lots of different directions.
Will you tell people how harm reduction actually began, where it came from the AIDS epidemic?
You mean back in the 90s? Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the 80s and 90s. Yeah, I mean, that's when they started handing out prophylactics and clean syringes in the streets when folks were unsure about HIV and AIDS. People were afraid, right? There was stigma. And, then some other folks said, no, it's okay. We're going to figure this out. We're going to slow this down. This is all we have to do. We're going to practice this harm reduction, and we're going to educate people. And suddenly we know better, and there's no more epidemic. Right? Mm-hmm. And so the same is going to be with harm reduction. The same happened with cancer too, right? We were stigmatizing people and calling them cancerous. But then when we found out that cancer is not a terrible disease, and then people looked at it differently. We have to do the same thing with harm reduction and substance use disorder.
When I learned about harm reduction, and this really came on in the spring of 2020, right in the heat of the COVID epidemic, I took this class. And I'll have you know, folks, I was a little skeptical about this harm reduction thing. I'm like, what do you mean people can use drugs? I just didn't understand it, because a lot of people still don't understand it. Mm-hmm. And I took the training, and it was 4 days of, oh my goodness, my eyes are opened up. And I realized that there's so many ways that we have been utilizing harm reduction in our society for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. We reduce harm in so many different ways. We've got shelters for people. We've got all kinds of different ways that we reduce the harm. So why can't we use it with substance use disorder and make it an okay conversation?
Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be anything that's big and major. It can be reducing how much you're using, right? It can be switching your substance. I'm not going to drink alcohol anymore. I'm going to smoke marijuana. But the bad stuff in my life is not happening anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I'm recovering from alcohol.
Right.
And so all things are good.
Yeah. And maybe in that reduction of that chemical, you begin to feel a little bit better and maybe begin to look at what's going on. There's so many different ways that harm reduction can just help a person begin to just take a deep breath and not be lost in their substance use at an overwhelming level, shall we say. Mm-hmm. So we're about to take a break, and I want to thank you all for listening. This topic is a little on the itchy, scratchy side, might be sort of swiggling in your seat wherever you are, but we really appreciate you taking the time to listen to the conversation around harm reduction. Thank you for listening to Redefining Recovery. There's no song,
and this house needs love in it, because without it, there's no home.
Welcome back to Redefining Recovery, a Recovery Revolution with Kati Frank and Aaron Fitzgerald. We are finishing up our conversation about harm reduction for this conversation. You never know what's going to come up next. So, Aaron, there's some really interesting statistics and facts about harm reduction and why it is an important conversation. Will you let us know?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that, you know, this is all evidence-based, right? We're not just saying open these facilities and allow people. The studies have been done, right? Mm-hmm. They've been open again since the 80s. Portugal did a big study. Their crime rate was the worst and their substance use and all of this was the worst infectious disease. And they had a group of scientists actually come in for an entire year and they kind of studied the country and what was going on and what was happening. And in the end, they said, decriminalize it.
Wow.
And so they did. And what they did then was they took the money from decriminalizing, or that they used to use it for criminalizing people, and turned it into different treatment facilities,
right?
And really just helped turn that around. And they had just such a great success rate. Mm-hmm. And so in Canada opened their first overdose prevention site in 2003. And they had some backlash several years after they were open and up and running, but it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And I believe that was in like 2006. Mm-hmm. And since then, they've opened essentially one new overdose prevention site every year. They've got 23 now up in the country.
Amazing.
It's amazing because the evidence is there that it's working. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when people say like, it's going to bring crime to our neighborhood. It's going to bring this. It's going to bring that. I assure you, it's not. The evidence is there. You know, they had the same questions in Harlem before they opened up on-site. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, the community is just fine.
Yeah.
You know, and they're having great success. They've only been open for a few years there. Mm-hmm. And they've seen already over 4,000 people.
And nobody's probably died.
4,000 lives saved.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right.
It's amazing. And I think one of the things that I learned from the Canadian model, and that is there was a period of time when people thought that cops would sit outside the safe use mm-hmm. site and they would just start picking up people for because they're going in, they're utilizing
right,
their chemicals
drugs.
And they would pick them up. Well, now what they're doing is they're actually bringing people that they find out on the streets that are struggling with substance use, and they actually bring them to these doors and they say, here, help this human.
Yeah.
Because that's where it all comes down to. Incarcerating people out of substance use and drugs is
no.
We know it doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, we got full jails of people that
Absolutely.
They're like redesigning all the laws in some cases. Because it don't work.
And I hope the police have something more productive to do than just pick somebody up for using.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you've got all kinds of statistics. Your crime goes down, infectious disease goes down, hospital visits go down. I mean, we know that people in the emergency rooms are dealing with folks that struggle with substance use, and they might be repetitive visitors, but you know, these are one of the places that we're talking about having peer recovery specialists, and then that idea of harm reduction too.
Yeah.
What can we do?
I was a huge repetitive visitor, right? I went back to the ER many times with my symptoms, and yeah, I could definitely have taken some breaks from seeing the ER.
Yeah, well, and I imagine if somebody would have said, hey, Aaron, you know, okay, you've been back a couple times, and we're glad that you're alive, but what could we do differently? What could help you?
Mm-hmm.
Versus many times you come in, you get regulated, and then you're just told to go back out on the street into the same circumstance.
If you're lucky enough to get regulated,
Yeah.
And so having a peer recovery specialist in those spaces would be really great mm-hmm. to help guide people into their harm reduction practices.
Yeah. And what we know is that harm reduction is controversial. Medicated assisted recovery is somewhat controversial. But when you look at the statistics, you look and you talk to medical professionals that know about these methods for supporting humans that are struggling with the disease of addiction, that it can help them. And all in all, it can save lives.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many people, politicians, actors, regular folks on the streets that are losing their loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to do is we need to intervene with love.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, these sites also, I mean, they open up the doors for so many different things. The possibility of finding recovery after you go into one of these places is 30 times more likely than just somebody that's using on the streets, right? Same with those syringe access points. Mm-hmm. People are 5 times more likely to go to treatment just because they're making a connection with somebody that they see who has made it through.
Yeah.
You've given me hope that I can also.
Yeah. You've given me an ear. Yeah. You've given me a place where I can say, wow, I'm just really struggling and I don't know what to do, but I don't want to keep doing this, but I don't know what to do. And mm-hmm. a lot of people are so lost in a cycle that they just need somebody to say, okay, great. Okay. We'll just sit down. We'll talk. You know, here's a sandwich, you know, go take a shower. You know, maybe you could be somebody who is really advanced in your career. You can be on the top of your game, but you can still have an addiction. Mm-hmm. So we can't always think about individuals who are at the bottom of the barrel, shall we say. And we have to think about all the people that struggle with substance use disorder. They're in many different places, in many different ways. And when we think that somebody is struggling, to say, how can I help you right today? What would reduce the harm in your life? Because I'm a little bit worried about you because I care.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if it's somebody who's drinking too much, mm-hmm. what are the questions you could ask them today? If it's somebody that you know who's injecting drugs, could they possibly use a different route of getting that drug into their body?
Right.
You know,
right.
There's just all sorts of different ways.
Yeah. And what we'd need to do is we just need to ask somebody, how you doing today? What's going on? What can I help you with today? And this can be anybody. You don't have to be a medical professional to care for people. You can be somebody who sees somebody flat out on the street and you happen to have Narcan, a story of a young woman who was downtown Minneapolis at some sort of festival and somebody was flat out on the street and she actually had Narcan in her backpack, but she was a little reluctant because she didn't know exactly how to use it. Well, somebody said, give me that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they took care of this person. This person bounced back. An ambulance was called and we can only hope that that human got better. Mm-hmm. But that in that moment in time, somebody helped somebody mm-hmm. and potentially saved their life. And who knows what can happen? We brought that person back to life. If we can save their lives, we have hope.
Absolutely. I mean, that's all you need.
We just need to have that hope. And we need to just open your mind. If you're thinking that, you know, the only way of getting people to get off of their substances is go to treatment and go to meetings
and quit.
Because, gosh, golly, just quit.
Quitting doesn't always work.
No.
And I know people in recovery from alcohol even who still drink, right? They can have their occasional glass of wine on the holidays, but otherwise they don't drink. But that's recovery.
Yeah.
Because what it looked like before was awful.
Right. They've made a change. Mm-hmm. They reduced the harm in their life. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I want to say that took me a while to understand, and maybe I'm sort of, you know, I'm admitting something, but I didn't understand when somebody is trying to get off opiates and you say, just stop, the addiction that your body has. So just, stop using them. Well, that throws people into withdrawal. Mm-hmm. And when you're in withdrawal, it's like, I quote a guy that we know on a video, it's like the flu times 10.
Incredibly painful.
And so if somebody, you say, just stop, it's like, you can't because it hurts too bad. So rather than just go back or just stop, you want to go back because you want to take the pain away. So, you know, folks, when you say just stop, you could be endangering someone's life. And that's why we talk about harm reduction. Mm-hmm. How do we reduce the harm?
Yeah. So check us out at minnesotarecovery.org. Send us your questions to podcast@minnesotarecovery.org. And also check us out on all of your favorite streaming platforms. This is Redefining Recovery, a recovery revolution.
And we are so excited that you are listening, and we look forward to hearing from you if we can. And just keep listening. We're going to have some great conversations. We're going to keep on keeping on. So thank you for listening.
Thanks, folks.